and welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related, and I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin. And we have a great hour for you. We're going to be catching up on the news. We're going to go through breaches of the week. An entire country got hit. And our deep dive of the week is going to be on social credit scores. China's ramping them up. We are ramping up social credit scores as well, though not necessarily in the way you think. This has the potential to rewrite how the government, how corporations, how everybody looks at you and thinks of you. Don't miss it. It's going to be fun. And as always, we're going to start with the news. And in healthcare news, we're going to be talking about artificial intelligence, which I think is a little bit of a theme for my news segment this week. But artificial intelligence is on par with human experts when it comes to making medical diagnosis based on images, and this is according to a recent review. Now, this search, which is from the UK's NHS or National Health Service, suggests AI is able to interpret medical images using deep learning technology. Now, in the medical field, deep learning AI, and basically deep learning is a sophisticated form of machine learning, is basically being trained in this specific manner. And I'm going to walk you through this real quick. A series of labeled images are fed into algorithms that pick out features within them and then learn how to classify similar images to the ones that they just saw. This approach has shown promise in diagnosis of diseases from everything from cancer to eye conditions. Now, the potential for artificial intelligence in healthcare has caused pretty much some excitement, with a lot of advocates saying this is going to basically be a ease the strain on resources, free up time for doctor-patient interactions, and even aid in the development of a tailored treatment. In other words, if we are taking some of the tasks that a doctor has to do, it basically is going to put this strain out there. We know that many places around the world have a medical shortage, and so here we are. This may actually help with that. However, and there's always a flip side to this, experts have warned that the latest findings were based on a small number of studies, since this field is basically littered with poor quality research, which is why last month the UK government announced a £250 million funding for a new artificial intelligence laboratory headed up by the NHS. To kind of get this going once and for all. And I think there's absolute truth in that, and that you have several different artificial intelligence, several different research teams. Their research methodology may not necessarily be the same across the board. And so that's something that we really have to look at. But when this gets up and running, I think this will actually help quite a lot of people. I mean, imagine you were able to use artificial intelligence to quickly identify, let's say, an entire population of, let's say, who has Ebola and who doesn't, you know, if there's an outbreak in West Africa or something like that. Or maybe we are looking at a region where there's one doctor for every, you know, 5,000 people, or, you know, whatever that low ratio is. And maybe that's a normal ratio. I don't know what that ratio is, but I'm assuming that would be a bad ratio in terms of patient healthcare. Maybe artificial intelligence is allowed, or given this, given that it has a good success rate, when all is said and done, maybe this supplements and complements the doctor in being able to help a lot of people a lot faster. We've also seen remote diagnosis now happen, and even a remote surgery over China's new 5G mobile network. So these technologies are here to stay, and they're coming. And I think it's absolutely fascinating where this is going. But the question then becomes, would you actually want an artificial intelligence making your diagnosis and possibly a medical decision for you? I think that's something we're all going to have to answer for ourselves. And eventually, at some point, society may simply dictate that that's the way we go no matter what. So that is your healthcare news of the week. And in online romance dating news, and I think this is probably a first for the radio show, my question is, would you let AI help you win the heart of romantic interest online? Or conversely, how would you feel if the words of the person you're interested in were actually thought of by an artificial intelligence? And that's where we are. Now, I'm going to tell you about two, in this little news bit here, about two different artificial intelligences that are designed to do just that. The first one is MEI. This is MEI. It is billed as a quote-unquote relationship assistant. Now, the Android version of this app has been around since September of last year or so, and basically what it does is it parses text conversations to estimate the compatibility and personality of the individual you're chatting with, scoring them along five different traits: openness, emotional control, extroversion, agreeableness, and conscientiousness. Now, the iOS version was literally debuted at the end of September of this year, so about a week or two ago, depending on when you're listening to this, and it basically has this singular function to suggest the probability on a 100-point scale if that contact is romantically interested. And so this is actually very interesting in the sense that the author of the article that I am quoting here basically took this and then applied this technology to conversations she was having with, like, you know, a friend of hers, a past possible romantic interest, and all of this kind of stuff. And the AI kind of had mixed results. The person that it said was most romantically desirous of a relationship with her actually happened to be her best friend since childhood. And that guy actually happens to be gay. So probably that's a non-starter for her. But that actually, I think, probably speaks to the intimacy they have in their communication. In their communication and goings on and all of that. Now, the other app I want to tell you about is one called Kygo or Kygo. This combines quote unquote advanced psychology and cutting edge AI to determine the personality of a person based on their emails or tweets, and then provides helpful suggestions on how to approach them or respond to them. Now, like any basic assistant, Kygo can basically slide itself into many different situations. Basically, if you're preparing for a job interview and you've got email correspondence there, if you're trying to figure out what to say to a person to win a second date, to better understand a partner after, let's say, you have a big fight, so you're in a relationship and then you're angrily emailing or texting each other or whatever, you can filter that through Kygo and basically say, hey, help me craft a response that will win that person to my side. And so I won't necessarily speak about the disingenuousness of this, but that is the question. I mean, if you are sitting there and, if you're trying online dating and you're like, oh, I think this person is really into me, is he or she into me? Basically, you can run it through a filter and it's going to say, yeah, with the probability this person is not lukewarm, oh my God, burning hot, whatever it is. And I think that could be very beneficial for some people. I have things like social anxiety, or something along those lines. But, part of it, I think, is disingenuous, if I had met my wife online, for example, and we were emailing, back and forth, and her responses, were generated by an artificial intelligence tailored to, let's say, my personality, to basically kind of hear what I wanted to hear. And then I meet her and she's nothing like that. That's a huge disconnect. And so I'm curious to see, where that stops and starts here, with romance. But apparently these two apps have been pretty much exploding and making a pretty good chunk of money for their creators. So take that for what it's worth. But if you need help on the dating scene or landing a second date or just want to make sure your boss isn't about to fire you, you can actually get an artificial intelligence that will tell you with a certain amount of probability and a degree of success that this is what you want to do or not. So that is your romantic online news of the week. And in Facebook news, and I actually think this is some positive Facebook news, which is not that often since they are continuously violating the law or privacy or, whatever else I'm writing about or reading this week. This one I actually like, and it's actually coming out of Facebook Australia, where they're running this pilot. Now, Facebook is looking at combating things like addiction, depression, anxiety, anger, and all of that kind of stuff in a rather surprising way. What they're doing in Australia is removing people's ability to see the amount of likes that they get. So in other words, let's say you post something and, let's say 100 of your friends like it. They can actually see it. They can like it, but they're not going to know how many likes, anger, whatever the emoticon is that you are tagging, the emotion, they're not going to see it. Only you can. And one of the things that we found in studies with younger people going back to about 2010, 2012 or so, is that the rates of self-harm, depression, suicidal thoughts, etc., have been skyrocketing for teens. It's been going up for boys and it's been absolutely exploding for young girls. And part of this, psychologists are looking at and saying, well, this is part of it as we are developing these, let's say, non-technical social networks. In other words, how we are actually face-to-face interacting, face-to-face building these networks. We don't necessarily have some kind of degree of measurement of how much we're liked or hated when compared to our peers. And there has been a good amount of anxiety, anger, et cetera, that has been basically pushed through due to the likes. So if, you know, the 12-year-old that is very much, let's say, you know, trying to develop this and is unsure of him or herself, and, you know, they get 10 likes and a friend posts a similar like and they get 50 likes, you know, that could potentially reflect poorly on them. They're not mature enough, you know, to say, oh, okay, you know, whatever, like it's no big deal. They're going to take that personally. And so I think that's something that is very much needed. And Facebook is rolling that out as a test for Australia right now. So if you're listening to this in Australia, if you don't have it already, it is coming for you. And they also have a similar thing in Instagram as well, I think, as they are testing and rolling that out. But I think that's actually a really good thing in the sense that, you know, it's basically like getting like a drug fix for a lot of people. Oh, I've got to get these likes. I've got to get all of this stuff. And so while you can see it, you're not going to know, you know, what anybody else is getting. Now, conversely, you know, if you are one of those people that absolutely lives and dies by how much social media hits you're getting, maybe you're one of those people that says, oh, I just got 100 likes, you know, and then you post another thing about it and all of this, and that maybe circumvents it. But I think for the most part, it's overall good, and I think it's going to do more good than harm. And so I'm really glad to see Facebook, you know, take this step. Now, that said, they're taking the step to combat this stuff, but this is a problem of their own making. I mean, quite frankly, they're the ones that basically came up with this concept. I know I've read an interview with the person that actually created the concept for the like button in Facebook, who deeply regrets his, you know, his concept of, you know, the damage psychologically that's done to a lot of people, you know, this need, this addiction to it. And so I'm glad to see that they're finally rolling this back, although they're not completely killing it. So that's your news of the day, and hopefully it'll be coming to a Facebook near you. You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And in quantum computing news, Google may have just destroyed cybersecurity, and specifically data security, as we know it. Now, basically, here's what's happening. Google, like many other research teams, are racing to develop quantum computing, and Google apparently has made a recent breakthrough. Now, this is highly contentious. I actually did a daily video on this, I want to say like a week or two ago, and I got actually quite a bit of response from people saying, holy cow, like, oh my God. Other people saying, no, Google's not there. Other people saying Google is, completely lied about this. But here's what's going on. Basically, there is an equation out there that takes a traditional supercomputer, and right now the biggest, most powerful supercomputer on the planet is called Summit. It would take Summit 10,000 years to basically crack this, and Google's quantum computer solved the equation in like 3 minutes. That's insane. And so basically, if the quantum computing is correct and they didn't take shortcuts, or do anything like that, that basically destroys a lot of cryptography on the planet. So when we're looking at encryption systems like RSA, for example, it would be take seconds, if you will, compared to, let's say, the centuries or millennia, for a quantum computer to, let's say, calculate and decrypt something, that a supercomputer would have to chew on forever and ever and ever. So I think that's a huge difference, it basically is going to turn the industry upside down. I mean, it obviously is a huge difference, but basically it rewrites the book on how we start approaching security, how we start approaching applying encryption standards to protect data and all of this. And we've been also working with quantum encryption. In other words, as you're moving data from one place to the other, quantum mechanics states, and I'm not going to get into this, and I'll probably get at least one letter from a physicist on this, basically that if you observe a particle, the particle is inherently changed. It isn't in the same state that it was before. And by virtue of that, if you are moving data through, let's say, a quantum encrypted system, if that is observed, meaning let's say somebody decides to start capturing those, you're essentially altering the state of that, which basically is altering the state of the data, which is corrupting the data, which makes it secure. There have been tests by the Swiss government in the late 2000s. They were the first ones to test it. We actually have a quantum encryption fiber cable running through the Holland Tunnel in Lower Manhattan right now. So this is actually on its way. And as we're looking at this, it's our methodology that's going to keep up. up, but the world, literally billions and billions, of humans, not to mention like probably quadrillions of files, will probably have to be re-encrypted, changed, re-secured. There's a lot of work to do, assuming Google just did what they did. And again, that is basically being contended right now, but nevertheless, even if it isn't, or let's say they took a shortcut, it is a huge step forward to be able to crack a 10,000 year equation in minutes. Wow. So that is your quantum computing news of the week, and we're going to see where this goes, but believe me, I will bring you up to date on this one, because this is a complete game changer for the entire planet. And now for breaches of the week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you, or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me, and I'm glad to give you a shout out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can email questions at securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions at securityfanatics.com. And I'm more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout out on the air. With that, let's begin. And this week's breaches of the week, just once again, I mean, we're gonna start out strong here, and we're gonna end strong, because woo, there is always a lot. Now, I would say the back half of my breach of the week actually was a little shorter than the previous week, because again, I do the show every 2 weeks or so, and that one was a little nuts. But we're gonna start with LastPass. Now, if you recall, LastPass is one of those password managers, and a good chunk of you out there listening to this may actually be running LastPass, and you know where I'm going with this, because it's breaches of the week. Here we go. Project Zero, which is Google's cybersecurity research team, just disclosed that a security vulnerability left some of those 16 million users, so LastPass has 16 million users, exposed to the risk of credential compromise. And that's interesting. LastPass could actually leak the last password used to any website visited. So if you go to a website and then you pop open LastPass and it fills the website in for you and you hit connect, that password would have been retrieved, not the entire database of passwords, just that one. Now, Project Zero analyst Travis Ormandy stated that, and I quote, LastPass could leak the last used credentials due to a cache not being updated, adding that, and I quote again, this was because you can bypass the tap credential cache being populated by including the login form in an unexpected way. Basically, what he's saying is, as it's logging in, it's caching that information. It's storing it temporarily in the web browser, in the computer. And so that is retrievable, with specific techniques. So LastPass obviously will update it, but this is why we update our password managers. That is beyond important. Moving on, let's talk about a company called MobileX USA. Now, this is one of many companies, although it was mentioned in the articles that I read on this, that basically it's one of these companies worldwide that has been leaking medical images and data. Now, ProPublica and the German broadcaster Bayerischer Rundfunk, and I'm assuming I'm pronouncing that correct, identified 187 servers in the United States that were unprotected by passwords or basic security precautions. Now, these computer systems were from Florida all the way to California, and they're used in doctors' offices, medical imaging centers, mobile X-ray services, and on and on and on. That is a massive violation of medical history, and we are looking at tens of millions of people probably being affected by that. Moving on, we're going to be talking about Lion Air. This is obviously, Lion Air is a discount airline, cheap tickets, wherever you want to go. Tens of millions of records from customers of the two airline companies owned by Lion Air have been circulating on dark web forums for at least a month. Now, this information was stored in an Amazon bucket that was open to the web, and the records present in these two databases, one of them has $21 million and the other one has $21 million records, and the other one has 14 million entries. And basically, this is a directory that holds backup files, and it was created in May of 2019. Now, the two airlines that seem to be the most exposed here are Malindo Air and Thai Lion Air. I presume that's the Thailand subsidiary of Lion Air. Another backup file had Batik Air in the name, and that airline company's parent is also Lion Air as well. So heads up, if you've flown Lion Air, you may have been exposed. You get what you pay for with them. Moving on, we're going to be talking about Lumen PDF. Now, The details of over 24.3 million Lumen PDF users have been shared today, basically on a hacking forum, and that is according to ZDNet. Now, the hacker said they leaked the company's data after Lumen PDF administrators failed to answer his multiple queries over the last few months. And so, in other words, the hacker basically said, hey, I've got all of this data. Lumen did not respond, so he said, all right, I'm just going to go ahead and dump it. So if you use Lumen PDF, heads up to you, your data was recently dumped. Moving on, we're talking about Ramsey County, Minnesota. Nearly 118,000 people who receive Ramsey County services, basically the personal services health information, all of this was compromised when hackers breached the county's email system in August of 2018. County officials are saying initially that more than 500 people were affected, but they just bumped that up to 118,000 and sent out notices. So heads up if you're in Ramsey County, Minnesota. Moving on, we're actually going to be talking about a company called Imperva. They're actually very well known as a security vendor. They're based out of California, and they make data and application security solutions. They just disclosed that information belonging to an unspecified subset of users in their cloud firewall product was being exposed online. Now, Imperva's cloud web application firewall, formerly called Encapsula, was the product. They've told everybody to change their passwords and enforce that. So heads up, if you use Encapsula by Imperva, or now called their web application cloud web application firewall, heads up to you. Moving on, let's talk about the Campbell Memorial Hospital in Gillette, Wyoming. They just suffered a ransomware attack. Now, all their computer systems were impacted. The hospital's cybersecurity team is working to basically restore this. And they had, as of September 20th, which is basically, like I said, the beginning of my breaches analysis here, they had no ETA. So hopefully Campbell is back online. And if you have anything to do with them in Gillette, Wyoming, heads up. Moving on, we're going to be talking about a company called Thinkful. Now, this is online education for developers, and I quote, Thinkful, we recently discovered that an unauthorized party may have gained access to certain Thinkful company credentials. So, out of an abundance of caution, we are notifying all of our users. This is according to Erin Rosenblatt. She's the company's vice president of operations, and basically this was sent to an email in users. Earlier this month, Chegg, which is an education tech giant, bought Thinkful for $80 million in cash, and we don't know if Chegg was aware that Thinkful was going through a breach remediation at the time, so we'll see. But if you use Thinkful, heads up. Moving on, we're going to be talking about a website called Animates. This is actually a pet retailer, and an email they sent to customers on Friday, Animates New Zealand chief executive Rod Gibson said an unidentified third party recently gained unauthorized access to their website and may have accessed customers' personal information and payment details. This is coming out of New Zealand, so we are heading down under here. After becoming aware of this security breach, they shut down the website, you know, started an investigation, et cetera, and they've notified everybody that they need to. So if you use Animate, heads up to you. Moving on, we're going to be talking about the city of Woodstock, Ontario. They just got hit with a virus that basically stopped the city from accessing email, its data network, and a whole bunch of other stuff. And while it looks like ransomware, they have yet to, as of my research, have some kind of formal request for money. Typically, there's a compensation aspect to ransomware that people just don't get shut down for no reason. Maybe they really piss somebody off with parking tickets. I have no idea. But if you are in the city of Woodstock, Ontario, heads up, your government at the moment is compromised. Now, let's stay in Ontario. This is all, obviously Ontario, Canada. Two southwestern Ontario hospitals connected and shared by common infrastructure are currently going through a cyber attack. So we are looking at the Listowel Wingham Hospitals Alliance, which oversees the Listowel Hospital, which is about 50 kilometers north of Stratford, which is, I guess, the big city in that area, and also the Wingham Hospital in northeast Huron County. They confirmed this past Thursday, and they are currently experiencing network issues, what appears to be a cyber attack. So heads up, if you have anything to do with the Listowel Wingham Hospitals Alliance, you may be compromised. Moving on, we're going to be talking about a company called Demant. Now, they actually manufacture a hearing aid called the Oticon, and they said they expect to lose up to 650 million kroner, that's about $95 million US, following a cyber attack early this month. Now, the company's server suffered what it described as a critical incident on September 3rd, disrupting production and distribution of their products. And so they basically lost almost $100 million or 650 million kroner due to a cyber attack. This is why we need good cybersecurity. Moving on, let's talk about Guthrie Public Schools in Oklahoma. Now, officials said they were victims of a cyber attack when somebody hit the district with a ransomware virus. Now, their superintendent told local news he was made aware of the situation on September 16th, but because of safeguards in place, no personal information was taken from students or parents. I really hope that's true. And Guthrie Public Schools, I hope you get it together and get that cleaned out. Moving on. Let's talk about Rheinmetall AG. Now, this is a German corporation based in Dusseldorf, and they are one of the largest manufacturers of armored fighting vehicles, tanks, ammunition, and various electronic systems for warfare. They just got a malware infection that infected their network and caused significant disruption at plants in three different countries, Brazil, Mexico, and the United States. For security purposes, they have not disclosed the details of this cyber attack, but heads up, if you are a customer, in other words, you're a government supplying your army with Rheinmetall AG, they probably would have notified you by now. Moving on, let's talk about something that affects the public, at least here in the United States, and that would be DoorDash. DoorDash, for those of you that don't know, usually cater to restaurants that don't have their own delivery service. And so if I, let's say you're in my area and I really want to, you know, eat with you and you're signed up with DoorDash, I can just go order your food off of DoorDash and then they will deliver it for me. You don't need a delivery service. They are absolutely huge now in the United States. They just had a data breach that affected 4.9 million consumers, Dashers, those are their drivers, and also merchants who signed up with the platform on or before April 5th of 2018. Now, they learned of quote-unquote unusual activity earlier this month and have launched an investigation, but basically what they've determined thus far is that an unauthorized third party gained access to DoorDash data on May 4th of 2019. This includes names, email addresses, delivery addresses, order history, phone numbers, as well as hashed salted passwords. In other words, the passwords have a little bit of protection on them. Last four digits of payment card details, last four digits of bank account numbers for 100,000 of their Dashers. That's their drivers, and also the driver's licenses of said Dashers as well. So that is a huge, huge thing. And if you have anything to do with DoorDash, let's say before on or before April 5th of 2018, let's say you signed up for it earlier, heads up, they exposed you. And stay tuned to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show as we take a quick break for a public service announcement. We'll be back right after that.